everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdell, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2019, and you're listening to episode 126, What's the Problem with Conversion Therapy? On this episode, I'm joined by Joe Dallas, who is the Program Director of Genesis Counseling in Tustin, California, which is a Christian counseling service for men dealing with sexual addiction, homosexuality, and other sexual and relational problems. He is the author of several books on human sexuality, including Speaking of Homosexuality. Joe has written an article for our Volume 42, Number 1 issue of the journal, and it's called What's the Problem with Conversion Therapy? Joe, it's good to have you on.
Good being with you, Melanie. Thank you.
Well, it's June, and June in the United States is Pride Month, and in 2009, and then for every year of his presidency, President Barack Obama designated June as the LGBTQ Pride Month. So this month, we want to focus a couple of our podcasts talking about a biblical sexual ethic as it relates to LGBTQ issues. And as a matter of fact, last month, I guess because university students aren't around in June, I experienced my first gay pride parade because I was actually in Mississippi, which is a very conservative part of our country. And I was in a university town and I had parked my car and did not know that it was the day of the pride parade. So I had to wait to be able to back out from my parking area until the entire parade passed. So that was my very first experience with, and actually one of the guys that was walking in the parade, there are many different banners and things, but it was raining. And I was just wondering, how is this guy walking in probably 5-inch heels in the rain? It was probably just a lot of coordination by him. But anyway, just to say that these issues, and they were celebrating it early, Pride Month, because of the fact that they're ending school. And so just the issues of that face people who struggle with same-sex attraction or who have professed to be homosexual, they just have basically now gone to every single part of our country, even the most conservative parts where I was in Mississippi. So can you explain to our listeners what exactly is conversion therapy? I know it's very controversial.
Conversion therapy, Melanie, is a very broad term which is now applied to any form of ministry or counseling to help someone who says, I have homosexual desires, I don't want to give in to them, what can I do? Now, originally, conversion therapy was a clinical term. It applied only to professional psychological counseling done in a clinical setting. And it was at one time called reparative therapy or conversion therapy, and it was practiced by psychologists or licensed therapists. And it subscribed to theories that were basically Freudian about the development of homosexuality, and it was designed to help people either change their sexual attractions or deal with some of the underlying issues that might have played into those attractions. That's really what conversion therapy originally was. But now the term has broadened to mean any kind of help given to someone who is in conflict over their homosexuality. So again, the definition has broadened considerably. Here's the kicker, Melanie. If you look on the websites of any ministry like mine, ministries around the country, even around the world, who offer help for people struggling with homosexuality, people who are saying, hey, I don't want to live this life. I want to overcome it. Show me what to do. You won't see the word conversion therapy in any of our websites. None of us call ourselves conversion therapists. None of us call what we do conversion therapy. But it's kind of like the term religious right. You remember when that was popular? That was kind of a pejorative, a negative term for conservative Christians who felt they should be involved in the political and social process. That's basically what conversion therapy has become. It's the boogeyman, because it is presented as a very sinister form of counseling that includes things like either electroshock therapy or guilt-inducing techniques, shaming people, or at the very least telling people that they are mentally ill and they're essentially defective and making them feel awful about themselves, none of which we do but all of which gets put on us anyway. So it's that's a long-winded way of saying it's a term which is being broadly applied, and the way it is defined is very inaccurate.
So is conversion therapy really a viable and biblical option for modern ministry to people who have same-sex attractions? I think all of us have seen some of the media portrayals of Christians who have ministry to those who struggle with same-sex attraction, saying, you know, you can't pray away the gay. This is not a viable way to even interact with people at all. So can you speak to that? Is that even an option for people struggling with same-sex attractions?
Sure. Well, some form of counseling or ministry is certainly an option for people struggling with same-sex attraction. Hey, Melanie, that's exactly where I was 35 years ago in 1984. I was a 29-year-old man who had repented of 6 years of homosexual behavior and participation in the gay community and even active participation with the gay church as a staff member. And so when I repented of all of that, I wanted to talk with someone who could help me navigate where I needed to go now. Because here I was, a Christian guy attracted to the same sex, saying, hey, what do I do with these feelings? Is there any chance they may change? If not, how do I learn to live with them? How do I deal with the feeling of being different, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? I needed help. So the help I got was a viable option. But here's the problem. Just as you said, this is a classic straw man approach. If you can convince the public that any form of ministry to a repentant homosexual is called conversion therapy, and if you can further convince the public that conversion therapy is some weird, exotic approach by which you make people feel terrible about themselves, then you can convince the public that logically conversion therapy needs to be shut down. And that's the current rallying cry of the gay rights movement. It was same-sex marriage. Now it's conversion therapy. Several states are seeking to ban it. It's being presented, as you said, in films and television programs and news stories as being either hyper-spiritual, praying the gay away, lay hands on people and they'll become heterosexual, or abusive, like using electroshock treatment or giving nausea-inducing drugs. There was a film which came out, Melanie, I think we've talked about it before, towards the end of 2018 called Boy Erased, and it portrayed a quote-unquote conversion therapy sort of camp setting where kids were shamed, they were hit with Bibles, they were told that they must have terrible relationships with their parents, and that's why this must have happened, and so forth. That is not what we do, but that's what the public is being told we do. And that's why people are even wondering, is conversion therapy a legitimate option? For any believer, any help you get, whether it's from a professional counselor or a parachurch ministry or from your own pastor, it must be biblically based. If someone can mentor you and guide you based on biblical principles, then yes, that is a viable option no matter what your life situation is.
So what are the objections that people have to conversion therapy? And I'd also like to ask you, since we have spoken before about some of the new movements within ministry to LGBTQ folks, like people who are involved in some of those who would identify themselves as Christians and gay yet hold to a biblical view of sexuality, do they also have, you know, objections to conversion therapy?
You know what? Yeah, Melanie, some of them do. And I myself have objections to some things I've seen done in the name of conversion therapy. So let's frame this properly. Any form of ministry will have been at times done improperly, whether it's evangelism or praying for the sick or teaching doctrine. When you have the human element in there, mistakes are made. What are some of the mistakes that have been made by people who practice ministry to repentant homosexuals? Sometimes people have offered sweeping promises of change. Sometimes people have said, hey, if you follow my program or let me pray for you or read my book or come to me for counseling, I will bring you to a point where you will never have homosexual temptations again. Well, hey, that's not a biblical look at sin, is it? Because when we repent of sin, we are not guaranteed that we will never be tempted towards that sin again. We are guaranteed that we will be given the strength to say no to the temptation. So that's a legitimate complaint. If someone was promised sweeping changes or a complete transformation by which they never have another same-sex temptation. If people were told that they must have had a bad relationship with their dad, that's why they have these problems, or they must have been molested, that's why they have these problems, that's very irresponsible. We don't know that that's true. Any counseling that insists on any particular secular theory is not good biblically based counseling. So that's a legitimate complaint. If somebody was unclear about what their credentials or experience were, for example, I am a pastoral counselor. I'm not a licensed clinician or a licensed therapist. I'm a pastoral counselor. I do biblically based discipleship counseling. I have all my clients sign a statement clarifying that they recognize that they've been fully informed before they start counseling with me. That's a legitimate complaint if somebody's credentials weren't clear. Certainly, if somebody resorted to bizarre techniques like extended hugging in counseling sessions, or body massages, or viewing heterosexual pornography to help somebody overcome homosexuality, those are blatantly abusive, unbiblical, immoral things to do. So those are legitimate complaints. But there again, all forms of ministry have people who have practiced them in the wrong way. So the name of the game, to my thinking, is correct what is wrong in the form of ministry, but don't assume that the form of ministry itself is wrong. After all, some stupid things have been done in the name of evangelism or in the name of healing, but that doesn't mean we do away with evangelism or praying for the sick. We just try to do it better.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Joe Dallas. Joe has written a feature article in the Volume 42, Number 1 issue of the journal, and it's called, What's the Problem with Conversion Therapy? To read Joe's article, please subscribe to the journal. A subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe, please visit our website, equip.org. When you subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, you join the team of print subscribers whose paid subscriptions help to provide the resources to minister to people worldwide who come to our website seeking to be equipped. And these free resources include our online articles and the Postmodern Realities podcast. In addition, we would like to encourage you to support this podcast by partnering with us. You will find a link on the landing page of this episode on equip.org, where you can receive one or both of Joe Dallas's books, either Speaking of Homosexuality and When Homosexuality Hits Home, or both of them as our gift to you for your donation, which will help to keep this podcast free. A few minutes ago, we were talking about various objections that people have to conversion therapy, and I want to know, do you think any of these objections are valid?
Well, yeah, I think that there have been valid objections to the way some people have practiced it. Let's compare this to other forms of ministry. Melanie, I believe in the power of God. I believe that God gives us power to overcome. I believe he gives us protection. I believe in that, which I think is a very biblically based belief. Now, there are some churches in some parts of the country where people take that belief and they distort it to the point where they pull out rattlesnakes in the middle of their worship service and dance around with live rattlesnakes, falsely believing that because Jesus said, if his followers take up a serpent, it will not harm them. So they're basically testing God. Well, and some of them have died in the process, by the way. Okay, that is a bizarre, ludicrous thing to do. And anybody who has been subjected to that kind of an approach in their church has a very legitimate complaint. What they don't have is a legitimate complaint against people preaching that there is such a thing as the protective power of God. And the same is true of conversion therapy. There are some rare cases where some people who have ministered to repentant homosexuals have either abused the people that they were ministering to, or they have misled them, or they have done quirky, irresponsible things in the name of ministry. Those are rare cases, but they exist. And I would agree that anybody who's been subjected to that has a legitimate complaint. But again, that is not a reflection on the entire body of ministry out there trying to help people who are turning away from homosexuality. So you got to take it case by case. This is similar to what we have in the counseling industry. I know for a fact, because I get the Journal of California Marriage and Family Therapists, every month we see that licensed therapists have been disciplined for having sexual relations with their clients or entering into financial arrangements with their clients whereby they blur the lines between business and personal life, where they have abused their clients in some way. And so they are disciplined. And that's as it should be. Nobody is suggesting that the entire therapeutic industry should be done away with because some therapist have abused their position or have done therapy improperly. And I think that is the way we need to view this whole question of conversion therapy. If people are in conflict over their homosexuality, if they do not want to engage in something which violates their conscience, they believe it is not God's will to pursue those feelings, if they want to stay faithful in their marriages to their spouses of the opposite sex, if they want to live in accordance with biblical guidelines, they deserve ministry and guidance. And there is no reason that should be denied them. That ministry and guidance should be given biblically and responsibly, but it should be given. And the fact that some have not done it biblically or responsibly is not a good reason to invalidate all ministry efforts to people who are dealing with homosexuality. And Melanie, while I'm on my soapbox, if you'll be patient with me for a moment, let me say what I really think the crux of the issue here is. The gay rights movement up to this point has been primarily about influencing the culture. As you said, you know, gay pride parades are now an annual event. The public school system, the media, news media, entertainment industry, the culture at large has largely shifted to a pro-gay position. Now, with this criticism of conversion therapy, since most people who practice what is called conversion therapy are Christians who are offering biblically based ministry to other Christians who are wrestling with homosexuality, now the gay rights movement is reaching into the church and saying, you people may not do this. And this is where we should all be concerned, because what we are seeing now is an attempt from the culture to reach into the church and say, we want to tell you what sort of counseling you may give each other, what you may say to each other, how you can minister to each other. That should frighten us.
So just in light of that, are there specific political issues that are linked to the conversion therapy controversy, especially in light of just the pro-gay position of our culture at large? I would say probably politically, but also just entertainment and schooling and all kinds of areas just culture-wide that are promoting this pro-gay position. So is there some specific political issues that Christians should be aware of?
Absolutely. The political reality is that the gay rights movement has as its goal not only the normalization of homosexuality, but also the silencing of anyone who opposes that normalization. As long as ministries exist to help people overcome homosexuality, and as long as counselors exist to help people overcome homosexuality, there will be voices saying no. This is not God's will. We take a biblical view of it. Those voices, in the eyes of the gay rights movement, must be silenced. But Melanie, let's not be naive. Does anybody really think that it's going to stop with conversion therapists or conversion therapy counselors? Not on your life. What the culture is doing is setting a precedent by which they're telling the church, hey, if you in any way are saying that homosexuality is a sin, you are damaging homosexual people. Therefore, we will start with your so-called conversion therapist. We will shut them down. Then we will shut down anyone who is a Christian who publicly declares homosexuality is a sin. And finally, we will shut you down in the pulpit. We will pass laws telling you that if you preach homosexuality is a sin, you are damaging lesbian and gay people who may come to your church, and therefore we have to stop you. because your religious freedom does not entitle you to damage people. That is absolutely where this is headed, and it'd be very naive not to recognize that.
So in light of all these cultural messages, I know there's Christians out there that are struggling with same-sex attraction, but then also hearing the culture affirm them. How do they move from that step if they've repented, they want to be free of what they see in the Bible is not a biblical sexual ethic? How do they make that step to think, okay, conversion therapy or any Christian counseling isn't going to harm me, it's going to help point me to biblical truth?
Well, let me clarify, Melanie. I think there are more important things than Christian counseling. And I'm saying that as a Christian counselor. As you know, for the last 32 years, I've been a pastoral biblical counselor to people dealing with sexual sins. I believe in what I do. But it is not the essential thing. Here's the essential thing. If any Christian recognizes, hey, I have sexual feelings that I don't want to have, if I follow these feelings, it will take me out of God's will. But I can't just make these feelings go away, so what do I do? You've got to first make sure that in your private life, you are investing in your relationship with God. You've got to be in the Word daily, at least a chapter of the Bible you've got to read a day. You've got to develop your prayer life. Make sure you're communing with God on a daily basis. You've got to get grounded in a local church. Don't go church hopping. Find a Bible-believing church. Get yourself planted there. Get to know the pastor, get to know the people in the church, become a part of the church community, the church body activities, build relationships with other believers. Ask for prayer, ask for accountability, and ask for mentoring within your church. You must cut off all ties that are causing you to stumble back into that prior sin. Of course, you've got to abstain from pornography. These are no-brainers, right? Now, if in addition to that, you feel you would benefit from some counseling, great. Go get some Christian counseling. Give me a call, for heaven's sake. Yeah, I'd be glad to work with you by phone or Skype or in person. But that supplementary Christian counseling is to Christian life what protein and vitamin supplements are to a good diet. You have to eat a good balanced diet. You've got to eat balanced meals. Now, in addition to that, you may want to take some protein or vitamin supplements, but those supplements won't do you any good if you make them your main meal. You've got to have a main meal, then supplement it. And that's the way I feel about Christian counseling. The essential thing is church life, your relationship to God and your relationship to other believers. Then you may choose to supplement that with Christian counseling. Keep it in that perspective, and I think it'll work for you.
I also want to ask a question about this in light of, you know, our discussion before about Boy Erased, and that is, what about Christian parents who see their kids as struggling? In his situation, his parents sent him to the camp, and I want to say this wasn't fictionalized. This is something that actually happened to a real person. So how do Christian parents navigate this if their child comes to them and says that they're struggling? Do they encourage them in their church body life, or is that for younger people, teenagers, let's say, is it helpful to also have that vitamin of Christian counseling? So help encourage parents in this area, because that's a big question they probably have.
Sure. Well, first of all, like I said, keep the main thing the main thing. If you've got a son or daughter who comes and says, Mom, Dad, I think I'm gay, or I think I'm bi, or I think I'm transgender, or whatever, I think first and foremost, you want to clarify to them, okay, we are here for you. We are Bible-believing Christians. You know where we stand in this family. Thank you for being honest with us, and I respect that. Now, I'm not going to allow you to participate in something I know to be wrong, and I'm hoping you'll view this as something not to give in to, and that we'd like to offer you help with that. However, the main thing is the church life. Get well-grounded in the church. Talk with the youth pastor. Talk with the pastor. Make sure that that son or daughter is well-grounded socially with other Christian friends, but do not force counseling on them. I've felt strongly about this for the past 20-plus years. I've written about it in my books. I don't believe in parents telling their teenager, you are going to get into counseling whether you want to or not. If you have a life-threatening destructive behavior, if your teen is cutting himself or she is actively suicidal, then I would say, yes, get them into professional psychiatric care whether they want it or not. But when it comes to sexuality, no. If they want help and they genuinely want it, then of course help them find it. But otherwise, don't force that on them because it won't do any good. It's almost like buying somebody a gym membership and saying, I don't care whether or not you want to work out, you're going to the gym. Well, you're not going to get any results that way. There's no point in it. So I think what you'd want to do if you are a Christian and you have a son or a daughter who has let you know that this is a reality in their life, you want to ask them, okay, explain to me, please, where do you stand on this issue? How do you feel about your own sexuality? What is your relationship with God like? And will you help me better understand how I can walk with you in this process? I cannot in any way tell you that I condone homosexuality, but I will see this as an area of your life that God is calling you to faithfully steward, which is what we've all got to do. And I think that's a good time for parents to say, hey, I've had my problems too, and God has called me to faithfully steward them. It can be hard, but it's worth it.
You said earlier that you were involved in a homosexual lifestyle and came to repentance around age 29. So at that point, did you personally benefit from this kind of therapy?
Oh, I did. I benefited from it hugely. But let me tell you why I benefited from it, Melanie. The first thing I did was I got grounded in a church. Actually, that's even not true. The first thing I did was I got into regular Bible reading daily and beefed up my prayer life and then got grounded in church, reconnected with Christian friends, got myself settled in the life of the body of Christ. Then I looked up a good Christian counselor. And one of the reasons this counseling was so helpful to me was my counselor told me from the beginning, look, I don't completely understand homosexuality, Joe. Nobody completely understands it, but I understand the sin nature. You've got feelings that'll take you outside God's will if you give in to them. Let's help you learn how to manage those feelings when they come up. Let's work on resistance. Let's work on understanding your cycles and understanding your triggers. And let's look at your soul. What sort of wounds might you have that need to be dealt with as well? How do you relate to people? Let's explore your potential. You know, Melanie, not everybody who repents of homosexual behavior finds that they move on to marry someone of the opposite sex. I know some very godly men and women who repented 30 plus years ago, yet they are still strongly attracted to the same sex. They wrestle with those attractions almost daily, and they have never felt attracted to the opposite sex, and they are living full and abundant lives as single celibate believers. Most other believers I've known who've repented of this, I'd have to say, have found that they meet someone of the opposite sex who they are attracted to, and they move on into marriage. But that's not a rule for everybody. We don't want to lay that on everyone. But for me, my counselor helped me explore my potential for heterosexual response, helped me better understand the ramifications of some of my early relational problems, and walked with me in what was basically the sanctification process. How do I deal with the struggle between the flesh and the spirit? That's what good Christian counseling does. And yes, I benefited from that. I benefited from it tremendously.
Well, you've talked about keeping the main thing, and one of those most important things is the attendance of church, being not just attending, but being involved in body life in a well-balanced, healthy, biblical, gospel-preaching church. So should churches themselves offer counsel to same-sex attracted people? I'm sure that's coming up a lot lately as get, you know, requests from parents or even younger people who are, you know, questioning their attractions, all those kinds of things. Or do you feel like churches need the help of somebody that they can refer to counselors in this specific specialized type of ministry, you know, dealing with sexual brokenness?
Well, first of all, every church should be offering help to disciple people who are dealing with any life-dominating problem. You don't have to have a special program to do that. You don't have to have a special support group or special ministry or a specialized counselor. The church should be there to help people In pursuing holiness and pursuing emotional and spiritual health, we do that with our Bible study groups, our prayer groups, our interaction with each other, the pastoral care that our elders and pastors give to people who come in for counsel. So every church should be doing that. Now, every church also has to decide to what extent they want to offer any kind of specialized ministry. You know, every church decides, do we want to have support groups for people who, I don't know, have a problem with alcohol or smoking or sexual addiction or whatever? And really, every church has to decide what fits the vision of our church. Do we want to offer specialized support groups, specialized ministry? And if so, in what area? For some churches, that's not a viable option. Other churches, as you know, offer all kinds of different programs for people dealing with all kinds of different problems. And so you have to ask yourself, does that fit into the life work of the church? Can we offer help to people who are dealing with same-sex attraction? Can we offer help to families who have loved ones who have come out as gay or lesbian? Can we offer special education to our young people to help them understand what is the biblical position on this? And then how do you express the biblical position on this? And then how do you defend the biblical position on this? Those are all challenges I think the modern church does need to take up. And I say this especially, Melanie, because, hey, around the country, there are states literally banning what they call conversion therapy, making it literally illegal for counselors of any sort to offer help to people who say, hey, I'm gay and I don't want to be, what can I do about it? So if it becomes illegal, and by the way, that's not a stretch, not at all. There's a national movement to ban nationwide any form of, again, what they're calling conversion therapy. If that happens, where else can anyone go but to the church? I mean, my story is not unique. It's common. There have always been, and there always will be, people who will come into the church saying, hey, I am attracted to the same sex, but I don't want to give into those attractions. Help me to live the life God intended me to live. And I don't care what laws get passed, there will always be such people. So if it becomes illegal for counselors to help them, where else are they going to get help but the church? So I would say the church better be ready for this. And I'll take that further by saying, if pastors, lay leaders, lay counselors, elders, mentors within the church have a good grasp biblically on how to deal with problems of the flesh warring with the spirit, how to deal with sanctification, how to deal with repentance, how to deal with walking in the spirit so you don't fulfill the lust of the flesh. If you've got the capacity to minister to people from those positions, then you definitely have the capacity to deal with somebody who's dealing with same-sex attractions. That's all it takes, good biblical grounding.
I agree with you. Even our local area here in Charlotte recently, a few months ago, one of the news stations did an entire story about conversion therapy and saying how dangerous it was and people going to churches to engage in this kind of counseling that's trying to change them. And so just like you said, even how it's being portrayed in the media is out there. So that can be confusing to a lot of people as far as like, okay, even some people who are Christians or Christian pastors, so-called Christian pastors, are saying that it was damaging to them. And so with that in mind, are there, you know, there's Christians out there, like I asked you earlier, they're same-sex attracted. And what are the steps that they need to take to deal with those attractions? You talked about being in Bible reading and so forth. But I also want to ask you, sometimes Christians are, you know, involved in the life of the church. You know, they are in accountability groups, but they're not really fully sharing, and they slip into old patterns and then might go down some dark roads. How do they really prevent that? I've seen that happen in our own area here, where somebody was involved in sexual sin and it became very dangerous in terms of, you know, maybe harming some underage folks and so forth, but they were very involved in the life of their local church.
Yeah. It's a terrible thing when that happens. There is temptation, then there's relapse, then there's ongoing patterns. All of us are tempted, Melanie. I don't care who the believer is. Everyone has temptations of some sort, and we are expected to deal with those temptations in a responsible way. to be honest about them, to seek prayer if they're very strong temptations, to say no to them, to do what we have to do to not yield to them. Then there's relapse. When somebody falls into a temptation, it's an episodic thing, it's brief. There's no excuse for that. I often say relapse is always possible, but it's never inevitable. You don't have to. So I'm not saying it's inevitable that somebody's going to relapse, but it happens. And when it does, that person needs to be honest and say, hey, I messed up. I used porn, or I committed adultery, or I committed fornication, and submit yourself to whatever church discipline your church wants to impose on you. I say impose on you. I mean, however they want to approach it for restoration's sake, if you're in leadership. Ongoing pattern is another thing. That's very serious. That's when somebody has an ongoing pattern of secret sexual sin that they're protecting. And where there's an ongoing pattern, that means, among other things, there's a hardness of heart. That's what happens when a Christian pastor or worship leader or elder or whatever gives himself or herself permission to keep looking at porn or to keep up an affair or to keep sleeping with a girlfriend or boyfriend premaritally. That means that not only do you have sexual temptations, but you have hardened yourself enough to keep yielding to them. And that calls for serious repentance, a softening of your heart, and ongoing accountability. So I think all three of them happen. I think we need to be more open in the church about the fact that, hey, we expect Christians to be tempted. And we expect Christians to deal responsibly with their temptations. And we expect Christians, whether they're laity or in leadership, to be honest if they have fallen into sin because they were tempted and they made the decision to yield to it. And I think if we have that kind of attitude towards confession and repentance and accountability, I think that we will see fewer of these kinds of tragedies that you just described where somebody is doing real damage within the body.
So where do you think that this controversy is taking us regarding conversion therapy, and how should the church and Christians respond to it?
Yeah, let's look at it both in the natural and in the spiritual. In the natural, I've got no doubt that we're headed to a Supreme Court decision on this. I think at some point, as more and more states are saying, hey, all counseling to help people who are in conflict over their homosexuality is dangerous and bad. Well, that's going to leave plenty of Christian pastors and counselors going, well, what the heck am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to say it's okay? Am I supposed to just shut up? Am I supposed to say I can't help you? This is not acceptable. So somebody is going to sue for the right to do what they are calling conversion therapy. Nobody's going to sue for the right to do the way conversion therapy is described, but they're going to sue for the right to counsel people who want help. And depending on the makeup of the Supreme Court at the time, a Supreme Court decision will either say yes or no to it. But I think that's where this is headed. And I think in the natural, we're going to see more and more people believing the bad press that the media is giving conversion therapy. Because unfortunately, Melanie, a lot of believers today are not well-grounded biblically, so they don't practice much biblical discernment. If they saw it on the news, they think it must be true. If they saw a movie about it, they think, oh, the movie must have portrayed it accurately, case closed, which is a shame, but that's a reality. I think in the spiritual sense, we do have to look at the fact that we have an enemy. Our enemy hates us. Our enemy hates what God has ordained for us. And the first institution we see God ordaining for humanity is marriage between a man and a woman, monogamous, permanent, heterosexual. If I hated humanity the way I know Satan hates humanity, I would certainly want to disrupt that delicate, powerful union God has created between man and woman and distort it and encourage people to go outside of it. And if people were helping people to get back to that original plan, I would consider those the first people I'd want to knock down. So if I was him, I would go after the so-called conversion therapist, ministry leaders, counselors, whatever. And I think that that's exactly what is happening here. I think that we have a spiritual dynamic by which the enemy of our souls very much wants to stop anyone from helping people have their souls and their lives restored. I think politically, we are seeing more and more intolerance for a biblical worldview and anyone who espouses it. people who hold such a view are seen as the enemy, and the enemy, of course, must be silenced. So it remains to be seen how strong the church will be, how steadfast we will be in the face of this opposition, and conversely, how steadfast citizens in this country will be in a fight for basic liberties like freedom of speech and freedom of religion.
Well, finally, I want to end on a lighter note with some fun rapid-fire questions for Joe. So, Joe, black coffee or cream and sugar?
Oh, black coffee. My goodness, if I want a hot milkshake, I'd just heat up a milkshake. No, coffee should be drinking black. I feel very strongly about that, Melanie. It's a serious issue.
Vacation away or stay at home with the staycation?
Oh, let's get out of here. Away. No, to me, it's not a vacation if I've got all the regular, you know, influencers around me. I've got to get someplace where I can forget about all that.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Early. It's amazing how much I can get done early in the morning. 3 hours between, say, 4 a.m. and 7 a.m., I can get more done in those 3 hours than I would get done in 3 hours in the afternoon. I don't know why that is, but it is.
And finally, what's one of your favorite websites that you visit?
Oh, goodness. That's a good one, because I don't go to that many websites. I hate to admit. I do look at Facebook, and I look at YouTube. You know what? This is a little off-kilter, but I really like the Plugged In Online website that Focus on the Family has, because my wife and I and my sons, we all love movies, and we love the guidance that they give if you're checking out what sort of entertainment is available and how it squares up biblically. So that's a website I really appreciate, Plugged In Online.
Well, thanks, Joe, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Terrific being with you again, Melanie. Thanks for having me.
Today's guest is Joe Dallas. Joe has written a feature article in Volume 42, Number 1, issue of the Journal, and his article is called What's the Problem with Conversion Therapy? To read his article, please subscribe to the Journal. A subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe, please visit our website, equip.org. When you subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, you join the team of print subscribers whose paid subscriptions help to provide the resources to minister to people worldwide who come to our website seeking to be equipped. And we have hundreds of thousands of unique visitors to our website every month. And these resources include our free online articles and our free podcasts, which include Postmodern Realities that you're listening to right now, and also Hank Anagraph's podcast, Hank Unplugged. In addition, we want to encourage you to support this podcast by ministering with us, and you'll find a link on the landing page of this episode on equip.org where you can receive one or both of Joe Dallas's books, either his book Speaking of Homosexuality or his book When Homosexuality Hits Home, or both of them as our gift to you in thanks for your donation, which helps to support this podcast and keep it free. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.